I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Men's Room podcast from TalkSport is proudly sponsored by Toolstation. If, like me, you love a little deal, then you can join the Toolstation Club today online, in-store or via the app, and you will save some money getting a 5% discount shopping with Toolstation, as well as a chance to get your hands on some fantastic prizes, such as TVs, gaming consoles, and even holidays. If you keep spending, you'll keep on saving. That's the Toolstation Club, so make sure you join today, online, in-store, or via the app. A Bosch.
Welcome everyone to the Men's Room. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Rory Jennings. He is great, Rory Jennings. Look, we're going to talk about a subject that is going to be difficult for some, mental health. If this subject is difficult for you, we have a number of other episodes that you can catch on the Men's Room. So make sure you watch those ones. But if you're happy and wanting to stay and watch this subject, please do, because it is an important one. Let's welcome in Mind Ambassador. I'm scared that I'm going to butcher this surname, but we're going to give it a go here. Ro Klitschuran.
Good effort, mate.
What is it,
Ran?
Though,
I would have gone Ran at the end.
Would you have gone Ran?
Ro Klitschuran, yeah.
Yeah, so I bag on Rory. Not quite.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Mind Ambassador. Yeah. Talk about that role before we get into everything. How did you become a Mind Ambassador?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually a trustee now at Mind, but I've been ambassador for about 10 years. And I really got involved through lived experience of mental ill health. Mm. So I was really ill for a long period of time. For about 15 years, very ill, undiagnosed. And it was Mind back at that time, around 2005, 2006, who gave me the support to try and rebuild my life.
When you say undiagnosed, has it subsequently been diagnosed?
It has, yeah. Yep. So I've got a diagnosis of bipolar disorder.
Right.
But for about 15 years, and this was back in the days of... Number one, not talking too much about mental health. Number two, being told to man up. And number three, not really understanding, because bipolar actually, if you look at the symptoms of bipolar disorder, they often look just like someone who is behaving really antisocially or irresponsibly and then can't deal with the consequences. They really do look like that, because you can swing... quite quickly. In my case, I had what they call rapid cycling between, you know, being almost on this irresponsible high where you're totally creative, you can't sleep for days, you're constantly whizzing, your heart rate's up. In my case, I was always kind of like partying, always wanting company. And then suddenly you'll go from that to being in a situation where you literally can't get out of bed with depression. And to the world looking in, and for me, for 15 years, what that looked like was, well, here's someone who's just really lost the plot and then can't deal with the consequences of it. So ultimately, you believe what the world tells you.
Yeah. I've heard Stephen Fry talking about bipolar. I think he's been quite open about his issues with it. And is it right in assuming then when things are good, they're good and you're on the up and you're feeling happy?
Yeah, absolutely. And in a way, I describe it sometimes as a false happiness. Right. But yeah, when you're actually in that manic phase, there's almost nothing or no one that can talk you down from it. Mm. So, you know, now I'd recognize myself going into a manic phase, and I very rarely get it, but it typically starts with probably, as I said, that increased heart rate. And then I will sometimes feel a bit agitated, but then as I come off the agitation, then it's this extreme, almost high mood. And, you know, I just want to keep on, you know, enjoying myself. Sometimes you can be extremely creative, but other times you just, you feel untouchable is probably the right way of putting it. And in my case, as I said, what that normally led to, I'd normally, you know, drink, reckless spending for sure.
Right.
I mean, I found myself in debt out of this world.
Really?
You know, I, for someone at my stage in life, I had so much debt, which really it took me until a couple of years ago to get my credit rating back on track from the age of 17. So that's a way in which it destroyed my life, really.
Right. And you know, when you would then, the crash, to refer to it,
yeah,
I hope that's okay. So when you would then crash, would that be brought on? What would that be brought on because of the reality check, because of maybe the hangover, because of maybe the reality of overspending? Spot. You'd then suddenly go, oh my God, I'm in trouble.
Absolutely. And I mean, I can take the mick a little bit now in terms of the overspending. I mean, I once spent a student loan, and this was back in 1992, 1993. I spent a student loan of 1,100 quid in 3 hours. Which back in those days, that is some effort.
What did you do?
I went to HMV and Foster's Menswear.
Okay. So what, you really, basically really bought every record?
Every record
was
going,
that,
and some great corduroy trousers.
Was that though to please other people? Was you doing that as you know, now looking back, as just to please people?
Nail on head. I think I around that same time, I spent 60 quid at a 50p a pint night.
And just being overly generous.
Yeah, probably had about two or three pints myself. And it was people pleasing. It was rent a friend. Often it was, I talked about the agitation that would come in at the start and then subside. But typically it would be verbally...
Bro, can we go back a few years? Apologies. Can we go back to your childhood, if you don't mind me asking?
Absolutely.
Because you mentioned that this started from when you were 17.
Yeah.
So what was upbringing like?
Upbringing, family, house? Upbringing was good. You know, my dad, as we were talking about earlier, my dad was a professional sportsman for the West Indies. I mean, cricketers didn't earn a lot back then, but, you know, my parents went without to make sure that I had. Dad was often away, but mum was ever present, you know. So I had a happy childhood, had mates, you know. I was an only child, but there were always mates around. I was always at the cricket ground. And then by the time I was about 7 or 8, weekends, uncle, family friend, every home game, I started going up to Anfield as age 7 or 8 to watch Liverpool, sometimes because back then rugby league was a winter sport. We'd stop at the stop on the way back and watch Wigan rugby league on the Sunday. So back then football was typically Saturday 3 o'clock, and then the rugby league was on the
sport
Sunday.
Heavy so upbringing, father of professional
heavy,
athlete,
I loved it, and you know, I played a decent level myself back then. So I was happy academically. I was doing well. I was inverted commas well adjusted.
Were you living in London?
No behavioural. No, I was up in Birmingham because dad was playing for Warwickshire. So grew up there. But yeah, I was a happy kid, and then I was probably about the age of 16 that I first felt, you know what, I'm not the same kid I was a couple of years ago. I became a bit more withdrawn, a bit more angry.
No trigger?
No trigger. No.
Birmingham at that time, so you're talking late 80s, early 90s, racism?
Yeah, we all grew up with it. I was protected from it to a point. Yeah. And in a way, that has fed into the longer story, I think, because ultimately, I'm a West Indian kid, and a very humble West Indian kid at that. Growing up in a fairly affluent white area, which meant that the English folk looked at me and said, yep, you're black. The black West Indians looked at me and said, well, no, you look Indian.
Yeah.
The Indians looked at me and said, well, you don't speak our language. You're not one of us. So I'm kind of like, well, I don't know who I am. I genuinely. So if I didn't feel that then, though. I didn't feel that then. I feel it now, and I think it's a big part of the story, that lack of belonging, because we all need to belong somewhere. You know, we really do. But I think it was mum and dad were going through a divorce, and it wasn't a great time at home around then. But again, I think that may have been a trigger and a catalyst.
The divorce?
Yeah.
It's amazing how often I hear that. Now, like, you know, when I talk to, I'm getting to an age now where some of my mates are getting divorced.
Yeah.
Even when you think it's fine, it's like my parents were divorced, but I was a baby. Like I wasn't even one. So I'd never lived with my dad in my entire life. I never lived with my dad. So it never really affected me. How old were you when your parents got divorced?
So by the time it went through, I was 18, but it started going. I suppose it had probably started going wrong a lot earlier. Mm. But again, back in those days, the values, typically more so than now, was parents stayed together for the children.
Mm.
And I kind of look, if I could say anything to my mum and dad now, it would be, oh, wow. I wish you'd have just walked and split when you should have done.
Yeah.
Because actually, it didn't do them any good, and it certainly did me no good. But there's no bitterness or anger there, because it was all the best intentions. They did what they thought was right.
Did you immediately, so you went to university and you were fine at university in terms of your academic performance?
No. So if I go back to say age 17, I asked at school, I spoke to one of my teachers that I could trust. I said, look, something's not right. I don't like hanging out with anyone anymore. I'm angry. I'm not concentrating on my work. You know, home's getting me down. And he was just kind of like, look, don't worry. You're going to be heading off to uni soon. You know, there's nothing wrong with you. Man up for 18 months and you'll be fine.
Mm.
Went to speak to the family GP. And he was kind of like, yeah, mum and dad are going through a divorce. Look, you'll be out of it soon enough. Mm. You're a bright kid. You've got everything you need. Man up, you'll be fine. So you listen to people in authority. And I did pass my A-levels flying colours. And then I go off to uni. And that's where really it all begun to really implode. And again, I think probably within a couple of months, I knew in myself that something just wasn't right. And I did go down to the new GP down there, and he was, again, that similar. Well, it's your first time that you've left home.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, you're just taking a while to settle into your new surroundings. Don't worry about it. You're going to be just fine. But actually, by then, it wasn't fine. I wouldn't say that any of my friends at that time were racist whatsoever, but they certainly couldn't understand life through the lens that I was coming from. They couldn't understand that I'd grown up my whole life being told that I had to be three times better than they had to be if I was going to make anything in life. And that's a big, big weight to carry on your shoulders. Mm. So they couldn't understand that. And that ultimately becomes, again, that barrier to asking for help. So I'd asked for help, you know, as we spoke about, I asked for help when I was younger. But when that help didn't come, I looked in the mirror and said, well, if no one's going to help you, there's no point asking again.
Alter ego. Like, are you creating something that's not real then, just to fit in and just to kind of carry on with life?
Tom. And ultimately, that was the alter ego that would manifest itself in my manic state. The one who was carefree, super happy, could spend money like nobody's business, untouchable. Because in those moments, I felt I felt as if I belonged with, you know, with these guys around me, and nothing could have been further from the truth. And then, of course, when the crash does come, you look yourself in the mirror, and that despair, that self-loathing, begins to kick in, because by now, the long and short of it is, when I went to uni back then, I failed first year three times.
Where were you?
I went to Southampton.
Right.
Great place. Back then it was Adele rather than St. Mary's. Yeah. I had some good afternoons there, actually. but, you know, I failed first year three times because ultimately I was in no fit state to ever go to lectures, because I was either in a manic or I was depressed and not able to leave my bed. So ultimately it was a period where I broke friendships galore. I got into this spiral of debt, and ultimately it's where I also started self-harming. And
that's what I was just about to say. Was there a crucial, like, you know, for you to have the moment of being involved in the company like Mind, yeah, was there a crescendo of...
And I suppose the crescendo probably lasted 3 or 4 years.
Right.
You know,
so you were self-harming at university. Did anybody know? Did your friends know that?
No, because it wasn't the archetypal, the stereotype that we have of self-harm.
So in my head, there is one.
Yeah, so it wasn't that stereotype that I was using. I'd actually beat myself up. So I kind of like, I'd beat myself up black and blue. I punched myself to the point of breaking my ribs. Apologies for any listeners for whom that's a trigger. Just being as honest as possible.
No, I think it's important to try and tell this story as accurately as possible.
And that was a hatred I had for
you,
for myself.
Did you ever have a journal?
No. And I, in a way, I remember so much of it lucidly, but I'm very glad that I didn't.
I say that just because when I went into a homeless hostel when I was 19, so I went to a homeless hostel, and in that hostel it was split between, it was 140 of us, so it was 70 males, 70 females, but you're in a homeless hostel, doors are getting kicked off, it was very, very violent. So I remember
kicked off because of crime in crime. There by police?
No, crime within
the hostel. People robbing
each
other, right.
Yeah, between itself. It was a hostel for 18 to 24 year olds. So you can only imagine what 18 to 24 year olds are getting involved with in the hostel. So I remember thinking, okay, I'm going to have to then almost morph into this gangster character to survive this hostel. But it was so difficult to keep that sort of face up. I'd write a journal of what was really going on in my head, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Of like just shutting that door. So I'd get home and, you know, you go through all the bad boys and it was getting you... But then as soon as I get into my room, I remember it now, 94. Since I get into my room, I shut that door and like, and then I'd write a journal of the day.
Sounds
of,
like you've both done the similar thing though.
Of
both
that. So you've done
characters.
It that way. My way was I've got to write a journal because I'm to survive this. It was almost like a prison. To survive this prison for the next 4 years are going to be difficult. Wow. So then I joined gangs because that almost felt like, okay, I've got to join them. I've got to join them to be cool and be okay with it. And it might have been, it sounds stupid now, but I've got quite a lot of tattoos. So it might have been, even that might have played in my head in a weird way of get a tattoos, be a bit gangster, and you'll get through this hostel slash homeless place.
But I think it's, we'll do anything as human beings typically just to feel some sense of belonging. Mm. Yeah, I'm actually a runner now. You know, I've part of how I got back involved in Mind about 2012 or so was I wanted to raise some money for them. Nothing more than that. I had no preconceptions about becoming an ambassador, trustee, or being on the journey that I've ended up on. But I wanted to raise some money with them, and I'd taken up running. And I've been fortunate now. I've run a good fair few marathons for the charity, which is great because it's great for my mental health as well. Yeah. But you know, if I look back now at that, you know, that whole journey, I'd been running, you know, I suppose proverbially, but I'd been running all my life. Because I was running from the shame, I was running from broken friendships and relationships, I was running from the despair that I was putting my parents through. I was running from debt. At one point, I was running from the police as well. I wasn't quite ever on the run, but, you know, I was running from every single thing that I'd
Do you still run?
No.
No?
I run, yeah.
But run I'm away not, from metaphor, things.
I'm not running away from anything now. I run to it. It's so important.
Rory will tell you, like, my communication's awful. And it's funny because hopefully he doesn't think it's just him. I do it to everyone. Like, my mum gets completely upset about it. And it's weird how I certainly still run away from things. I don't know why I do it. I don't know how I do it. I just, I don't know. I don't know if it's living alone, but I go home and I definitely 100% shut the door and that's it. I don't want to hear from anyone. I don't want to speak to anyone. And I feel bad because we've obviously built up a friendship and he doesn't understand sometimes. I'm like, dude, I message you, like, what's wrong with you? Respond back. And I see it and I promise you, I do want to respond to you. I see it. I want to respond. But it's weird how my mind just shuts away and I've definitely lost partners, good friends, family members to this day. And I'm just, don't worry, I know it. And so I try to overcome it, but I still run 100%.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
The Men's Room podcast on TalkSport is proudly sponsored by Toolstation. This is your little reminder that you can join the Toolstation Club today online, in-store, or via the app. You might be thinking, why would I sign up? But I'm glad you asked. At Toolstation, if you keep spending, you keep on saving. Signing up means that not only will you get a lovely 5% discount shopping with Toolstation, but there are thousands of prizes to be won. So that's the Toolstation Club. So make sure you join today online, in-store, or via the app.
A couple of times you've mentioned going to Anfield. Off camera, we've spoken about football and the importance that it's been in your life. Do you belong at Anfield? Do you feel at home there? Where do you sit when you go?
I'm typically in the main stand towards the cop end.
Right.
Above the corner.
Is that a home for sort of maybe a spiritual home? Is that...
Yeah. The minute I set foot off the train at Lime Street Station and I look up and see that clock, I feel I'm home. I always describe home can be two places for me. It's number one, anywhere where I'm with my wife, because that is my home. That's where I'm meant to be. And it's where I told her I'd be till death us do part. And then at Anfield. Mm. Those two places where I have that huge sense of belonging. And football is such an interesting one because I always talk to people and say, you can be in a crowded room full of people and you can feel like the most alone, lonely person there's ever been. And I probably do the flip side when I'm at Anfield. So typically, I mean, I spend loads of time before the game and after the game catching up with my friends, etc., because that is the one place where I know I stay connected, because a lot of the time I'm like Ade, I like my own space. So other than when I'm with my wife, I will often have my friends saying, when are you coming out, where have you texted, you know what, I work hard during the day and I need that time just to process. And I need that time in four walls by myself just to process life around me. But going back to football, it's I typically sit on my own. Very rarely will I sit with someone that that I know. I've got to see on my own. Obviously, I'm not on my own because it's a stadium of 60,000.
But you feel part of it.
Ultimately, yeah. that's it. I get this magical world where I get to belong, part of something absolutely massive, part of, you know, part of what it means to support Liverpool Football Club, much in the same way as it will be for you when you're at Stamford Bridge. Yeah. You're part of this incredible force, but yet I get to, whilst being part of it, still be able to just have that alone processing time. Mm. We've got to this point in life where we have created this full state of anxiety because we're constantly worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. You're worried about who's going to be on the show this afternoon. And, you know, we're panicking about something that we didn't do yesterday. Mm. So we're constantly forcing this this state of anxiety and worry on ourselves. And you've got to find something every day. And I mean, it was the focus of a campaign that I did with Mind and Heads Together a couple of years ago when, before the FA Cup ties, they showed the video around mental health for a minute before third round cup ties.
Yeah.
And it was all focusing on taking a minute to understand what are the things which actually allow you to benefit for your mental well-being? What allows you just to live in the moment just for those, you know, brief few seconds a day, hopefully more than that. Yeah. And, you know, for some people, it might be cooking, it might be reading, it might be hanging out with mates. Often I've used running, but actually the one time when suddenly I don't care about work, I don't care about anything else, for those 90 minutes, it's about that time with your friends. Mm. Connecting. I know when we were speaking off air earlier, and Ade was saying, because a lot of the time he watches a game on TV on his own, actually a very difficult experience when the result probably doesn't go as you expect it, to the one for me, which is within 5 minutes, we're back having a chat, having a beer before I jump on the train back home, and it's kind of like, well, you know,
by that point you're having an argument with someone on social media.
I'm arguing to myself if I'm honest with you. Can I quickly ask, how long have you been married?
Married for nearly 4 years.
And how long have you known your wife?
About 6 years.
How comfortable and how difficult, how easy was it for you to have this conversation with her about the self-harming and sort of what you've been through from the ages of 17 to the late 30s?
It's actually a quite amusing story. We were on our first date, and we got chatting. She used to work at a church in the city of London, and it was at that church that one of mine's corporate partners, a law firm, did their Christmas event back in around 2015, and I'd spoken at that Christmas event on behalf of Mind about mental health at the time. You know, we're on our first date. She's kind of like, you look familiar. I know you from somewhere. And she just said, did you ever speak at a church about mental health? And I'm kind of like, gosh, this is not a first date conversation. So I start going off on one and telling her the whole story. And she was kind of like, I didn't need to know that. She just said, I knew you'd spoken, but I didn't know what you'd spoken about.
Yeah.
So,
oh, right.
Ultimately, it became a very, very easy first date. Well, not an easy first date conversation for me, but it kind of like, first date, it was out there, which was
That's good, though, isn't it?
It was. And she's the most incredible woman when it comes to understanding my triggers. Encouraging me to continue doing the work that I do with Mind. You know, I have had some challenges with my mental health the last couple of years. I went through a prolonged period of anxiety and depression last summer.
Was there a reason?
And a combination of things. Work wasn't particularly great at the time. And in fact, you know, my wife herself had gone through bereavement. So, you know, I think, again, it came back to that man thing, actually, of feeling incapable at that time because work was really a huge burden on my shoulders. And I knew what, you know, it was impacting on my mental health and feeling almost incapable of looking after my wife when she needed me most.
I always find if I'm going through something, whether it be mental health or depression or anxiety, whatever word we want to use, and I don't know the trigger, that's my biggest problem. Like someone, my sister might ask me, what's wrong? And like, work's good and social life is good, money's in the bank, gym's good, all the, Liverpool are doing well. And then I'm like, I don't know, but I'm feeling a certain way. And I can never really answer that question. I never know what the trigger is.
But it's also great that you can acknowledge when things aren't great.
Yeah, I can just feel it. I can just sense. Yeah,
because when your mental well-being's off, physically is where you get the telltale signs. Yeah. You're either, you know, totally fatigued, or I know if I'm going perhaps into a state of manic, or if I'm going into a state of anxiety, my heart rate goes through the roof. I can't eat. Normally I eat everything that moves. I actually quite adversely, running is the thing that's so good for my mental well-being. But when my mental well-being is bad, I can't run because typically my anxiety is up so high that I can't bear the thought of doing something which increases my heart rate even further.
Yeah.
So I kind of like, you know, if I've not been sleeping and I wake up, my heart rate's going boom, boom, boom. And I'm kind of like, I can't run. I've learnt now at that point that I can still take a nice, you know, couple of mile walk into work rather than running in, or just go for a walk in the morning, often listening to this podcast. Just being able to walk and list. So again, it's learning about different coping mechanisms when you see it. But Ade, you're so right, because again, we all want to understand what's going on. And when it hits you and you kind of like, well, actually everything seems fine. What's causing this? And sometimes we just have to understand, actually, with mental well-being, it can hit anyone at any given time. And all we can do sometimes, and I think it's really one of the key things that I always say to people, is try and reframe the conversation, because we always talk about mental health, but the minute we talk about mental health, most people think about mental illness, mental ill health. And actually, I'd really like us to get to a point where we're really talking about mental well-being. So, you know, you imagine with your physical well-being, you know what's going to be like. You talked about going to the gym. Mm. 1st of January, the whole world's in the gym. And 5 fruit and veg a day is just not enough. Mm. Give me 25. Because everyone's on this magical health kick. Now, ultimately, none of that's going to stop you getting ill. But what it will do is it's going to make you healthier. You know, the healthier we are, if we rest, you know, if we sleep, if we eat healthy, if we train, etc., if something goes wrong, you're probably going to have a much better chance of recovering, because you're boosting your resilience. And it's the same with our mental health. It's kind of like we've got to reframe the conversation to stop just talking about mental ill health. We've got to talk about boosting our mental well-being, to the point that it doesn't mean that we're not going to be among the 1 in 4 people this year who will suffer a mental ill health problem, whether it be depression, anxiety, whether it be something beyond that. But whatever happens, in most cases, if you've been building your mental resilience with the right things, i.e. if you are sleeping well, if you are connected to people and talking to them, if you've got your coping mechanisms, the reality is when that hits, you've got a much better chance of actually dealing with it and being able to overcome it. And I think that's where we've got to start reframing the conversation. And again, it's where football comes in, because for me, you know, when I'm at the match with my mates, it's when we just have honest, raw conversations. And I love it, because I've grown up being told, we've had it for so long thrown at us, that men can't talk about stuff like this. The three of us here are proving different. We're constantly told men can't be vulnerable, but you know, when I'm at the match, believe me, I've got a group of mates and we really can be vulnerable and raw among each other. And it's a really special thing.
Can we have an honest conversation about the term man up? And like me and Rory have spoken about it. I'm very honest about my own sort of depression, anxiety, but I also feel that term man up, is there a place for it? Maybe not the term, because I feel like the term now has been sort of diluted where it's become a negative term, but there has to be surely a term or a thing of men get on with it. Is there a place for that?
So, crikey, put me on the spot. There is definitely a time to push our resilience to the
next. Yes.
There is a time to continue building our resilience, which is exactly that. I think it's a conversation you can have with yourself. Mm. A conversation when you know honestly, actually, what more can I do here? Mm. What more can I do? Or who can I ask to come on this journey with me? So definitely wouldn't use the phrase.
But so it's not a phrase that we should throw at each other.
Definitely.
So it's more within yourself.
It's a phrase within yourself that you can say, yeah, actually, I know that I don't need
I've got a bit more here.
I've got more, or I've got people and tools around me. And I think that's the thing. That's why it's not man up. It could be friend up. It could be tool up. It could be tool up sounds really weird. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. But it could, let's rephrase that one. It's man up, well-being kit up, whatever. It's that moment when you know, actually, yeah, I've got more at my disposal that I can use. And as friends, I always used to tell the story. I had three mates in particular as I was continuing to go on, my recovery journey. And so going back, and I think we've probably not covered it, which is great for me. But, I had three attempts on my own life. And the last of those attempts on my own life was in January of 2006. For the first few years after, I didn't really talk to anyone because I thought it was still at that time when mental health was very taboo. And it was also a time when, I felt ashamed of it. And I was learning to be a man, almost as I was a child in a man's body, because all I'd had was chaos from, between the age of 16 and 32, as we've spoken about. I'd never known any kind of order in my life. I'd never done the normal things, holding down a job, paying rent, or a mortgage, feeding myself regularly, just functioning like what the world thinks is a responsible, normal human being. And, it got to that. I just needed to almost learn how to do that. And I was making new friends. I was beginning to hold down employment. I was just getting back on my feet. And it was kind of like, well, we don't need to tell anyone about this. We don't, let's just quietly rebuild life. But I remember in time, and I'm always open, my Christian faith is hugely important to me, and I remember being in church the one time, World Mental Health Day, and they were talking about counseling services that they had close by, etc. And I remember walking out and just thinking, hold on, I'm actually denying myself, I'm denying my full self here. I'm not telling people who I am. And I actually, need to share this with other people. I need to be my full self. And it was from there that I actually started doing some blogging with Time to Change, which has been, one of the longest standing campaigns, joint venture with Mind Rethink and other charities around mental health, to really challenge the stigma around mental health. And I remember at the time doing a blog post with them, and I said, I've got three kinds of friends. I've got the one who, if I'm having a difficult time, I can go to, and he'll just be right, let's just go to the pub, watch the football. So he's the one that I go to if I don't want to talk about it at all. I just want some company, but I just want to feel normal, not think about the mental health aspect. Then I got the guy who, he's the one who actually will, he'll give me therapy without me needing to go to a therapist, because he'll ask me so many questions. I'm kind of like, by the end of it, I'm kind of like, whoa, where's that gone? But it's great because it gets me into that conversation with my feelings. And then I had the third one, which comes back to the man up, apart from the fact that she was really, it was a she and she'd be womaning up, but she'd be the one who challenged me, right, do I have to worry about your mental health here, or are you just having a really bad day like so many other people are doing life? And it was in those moments that I'd really have to reflect and think, actually, yeah, this isn't about my mental health always. It's just like anyone else, I'm capable of having good days and really, really awful ones as well. So it's kind of like there, that self-reflection allowing you to know, actually, what more can I do here? And there will be a time when you don't have the tools and you're going to say, actually, I need help. I need help from whether it's someone professional or one of those three friends. Yeah. I just need to, the one thing that I just tell anyone listening or watching this, please, please, please don't go this alone. Because the one thing we have done, we've not necessarily given people the tools, and we definitely haven't got all of the resources in terms of, you know, what the NHS is able to provide. But what the likes of Mind have done is transform the landscape around mental health to the point where we can speak openly.
Talking is the answer. Is if there's one thing that you take from this podcast and you being open and honest enough to share your experiences, I think it's speaking to somebody, and almost anybody, but make sure that you have the conversation.
Make sure you have a conversation through the debts I had, etc. Like had I've had times when I've had nowhere to go at night. I slept out in Victoria Coach Station. I've known the lowest of the low, and I didn't ask for help because I was too scared. I was too proud. And I was too isolated. And that's why ultimately I ended up attempting to take my life three times before I did get the help, the respect, and the dignity ultimately from Mind. And it was them who actually were able to lead me back into the system to get the diagnosis. And the diagnosis was the most liberating thing ever. Just speak to someone. Speak.
Just talk.
Thank you so much.
Honestly, bro. Fascinating. And look, you mentioned sort of people being a champ and a superstar. I think you've been a champ to be as open and honest as you've been on this podcast. And there's no doubt people listening and watching this will be very, very happy that you've been as open as you've been. I'm mind blown by some of that stuff. I feel like I've been through a lot, and then I hear that and it's like, okay, you've been through a lot.
Equally, you've inspired me. So thank you both for having me.
You're very kind. Thank you so much for coming on. Brilliant.
Just before we wrap, in terms of people wanting to get in touch with Mind, I can see the sort of website there. Social media handles, is it just Mind?
Mind Charity on Twitter and Instagram. Mind, again, likewise on Facebook or LinkedIn. I think they've probably got TikTok channels, etc. now as well. But if you go onto mind.org.uk, they've got you've got all the links to the info line, a lot of downloadable material. So start on the website, and there's plenty of spaces to go from there.
Have you noticed it's an increase in sort of men phoning in, especially when people like your Tyson Furies talk about mental health, and other sort of big name, high profile sort of really masculine men have sort of come out and said, I'm struggling mentally. Have you noticed more men phoning in, getting in touch?
Bit of both? Mixed? Probably not enough.
Mm. What about from the black community?
Absolutely not enough.
Yeah, no way.
And, you know, we spoke about the system earlier on. You don't need to speculate. The data says everything that you need it to. Men of colour, black men in particular, are underrepresented within the mental health care system. And because of the systemic prejudices that they've faced in other areas, the reality is that our communities are too scared to ask for help. And, you know, ultimately, that's why it's so important that MIND has a commitment to being an anti-racist organisation. It's part of our strategy. And as a trustee of the charity, I'm very privileged to have a part in guiding us through that strategy. And we absolutely have to make mental health care equitable for all.
Ro, I think this will be the first of many conversations. I think it's an important conversation that I think a lot of people need to hear and listen. And if we're open and honest, as we have been in this podcast, we can all speak about our own sort of journeys. And your journey, again, fascinating. So thank you so much for coming on. What an interesting podcast that was.
Huge.
I think this could be the final one of the series.
It is the final one of the series.
First to say, we've gone out of a bang, right?
Yeah.
We have gone out of a bang. But honestly, look, if you have listened or watched this podcast and you do need to speak to someone, I've done speaking therapy myself and I can tell you now it's helped me a tremendous amount. Go and speak to someone. Go and speak to someone. That's the best thing you can do. I'm lucky that I have this man every single thing, every single day. He says, Ade, go and talk to me. How was your day? All the time, yeah, which he doesn't realize how important that is. So look, go and speak to someone. Don't do it alone. We will have someone we can reach out to. And if not, then MIND. MIND have always been there and they're helping a number of different people to go through the problems they're going through. So make sure you get in touch. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast and for watching it as well. And we'll see you in the next series. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Do we start the plan now? Next series, leave a comment below. Thank you very much, everyone.
Toolstation are the proud sponsors of the Men's Room podcast on TalkSport. Join the Toolstation Club today online, in-store or via the app, and you will save some money getting a 5% discount shopping with Toolstation, as well as a chance to get your hands on some fantastic prizes, such as TVs, gaming consoles, and even holidays. If all that isn't enough, then remember, if you sign up, then you will get loads of exclusive discounts that aren't available anywhere else. That's the Toolstation Club, so make sure you join today, online, in-store, or via the app.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.